Tonight's show is sponsored by Kathy. Hey, that's me. This is Goofy.
No, it's great. You are the sponsor tonight.
Oh. She makes the coffee that keeps us going.
See, that sounded great.
It still needs some work, Jerry. I'm going to go make some coffee. I still think it sounded goofy.
High on a mountainside near the asylum in the ghost town of Jerome, Arizona, you are listening to Jerry and Kathy Wills. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Sunday night. Here we are already in August. I'm glad you could make it. We're going to have another fantastic show this evening. If you've been paying attention, I would say every show we've had the past few weeks has been fantastic. Just absolutely epic. It's September? Never mind. Hello, everyone. Welcome to a fantastic September. How's that for time travel? Hell, I don't even know where I'm at. So let's not worry about details like the date. It's really September. It is. Well, where did August go? Anyhow, where was I? We're going to have a great show this evening. Guess what? We have a guest that I think you're going to really find interesting. His name is Dr. Jonathan Reed. Now, I met Jonathan up in the Seattle area. I was attending some kind of a UFO conference up there. If you're a longtime member, you probably remember. We were up in Washington State. I did a live broadcast of my presentation. Daryl Sims was there and a few other folks. And graciously, Jonathan and Holly, the beautiful Holly, showed up. And we spent some time together and really had a great afternoon visiting. And I got to hear Jonathan's story right from him at that time. We were spellbound. Got a copy of his book, Link. We'll be talking about that later. It's a great book, very interesting. If you haven't read it yet, you might want to check it out. But, this story is... You hear stories from a lot of folks who have really unusual encounters with extraterrestrials, with UFOs. I mean, my God, you've heard my stories. And you've heard about Travis Walton, and, you know, there's a lot of other ones out there. I think this one that Jonathan's going to relate to you is right up there with some of the most profound that I've ever heard. Now, you're probably saying, well, do you believe it? Yeah, I do, actually. And I'll tell you why. Not because I think Jonathan and Holly are really fine people. They are. But you remember, when I look at a person, I see energy around them. And I use that as kind of my gauge. If someone's telling me a big tale, the energy is really very obvious to me. I can see it. The energy was pure. The details were concise. There wasn't any fluctuation. I saw, I believe. Kathy is a person that when someone's giving her a line of bullshit, she can pick up on it immediately. She didn't feel that there was anything about the story that was untrue. That's a double negative, I know. But, in other words, she felt it was an accurate rendition of what Jonathan experienced. And so I've been waiting to have Jonathan on for a while. Basically waiting until this system was working. The... Well, what? It's freezing. Well, it might be because yours is pulling off of the same tower as the highway. Okay, well, there's nothing I can do about that. We are on the air on the radio server as well. With the holiday traffic, we might be experiencing a little bit of a difficulty with the feed. I don't know. Kathy says it's freezing, so we'll have to wait and see when I go looking at the recording. Anyway, this is an amazing story. I wanted to share it with you, and I was waiting until this system was working properly because I didn't want any problems, and now I'm told it's freezing. Yeah, well, that's how it goes. So instead of me telling you all about Jonathan, what I want to do is bring him on, and he can tell you about him himself, and then he can start telling you about the story. Now, as you know, this is supposed to be a two-hour show. Fortunately, we own the entire everything, so we'll go as long as we damn well please. We're going to get through this story. We're going to be taking your calls, provided everything works properly, and give you a chance to talk to him as well. So, without any further delay, let me just push the button, and I might have to make an audio adjustment for this one, too. I don't remember. Anyway, let's bring Jonathan on. Well, there we go. It looks like everything kind of did what it's supposed to do. Hello, Jonathan. Hey, Jerry, how are you? I'm good.
Doing good, thank you. Doing good. Appreciate the opportunity to share with you today and your audience.
Well, you're very welcome, and I really appreciate you being here. It's a real privilege to have you on.
My pleasure.
So let's start at the very beginning. Tell me about, you're a doctor. What kind of doctor are you? Tell me about yourself.
Developmental psychiatrics, child development, that's behavioral sciences, medical doctor, graduated from San Diego State, UCLA, and the University of Washington. Did some work both at John Hopkins and the LA Institute of Child Development before I graduated.
Okay.
So about 14 years of study. So way too long, but knew what I was doing when I was doing it. I ended up working at the University of Washington Medical Center, where I ended up being I was head of the department at that time. I had been there about 15 years when all this happened one day. Until then, I was happy. I had enjoyed my life, my career. I had met all my own personal expectations. Again, very happy in working with kids and their parents, and just enjoying my life.
And then, go ahead.
So I was just going to say, on October 15th, 1996, is the day of the event. And let me just say, I like to say this at the beginning, is I was basically a skeptic regarding any of this type of subject. There really wasn't anything that led me to even think about this much. I really wasn't into science fiction or even fiction. Being a medical doctor, you're constantly reviewing material and updating your own circumstances with a continuing education. So my life was really full. I was working 15-hour days, almost 6 days a week. But I enjoyed it. I liked it. I liked the people I worked with. And I was on a road to making some personal and professional accomplishments that I had hoped to do. But I had a dog. My dog's name was Susie. She was a 7-year-old golden retriever. almost a companion more so than a dog. I mean, she would go with me to work. She would see patients with me. Kids loved her. Just a great, great dog. You know, she was smart. She could let herself in and out of the house. But gentle, a real gentle dog, not aggressive at all. And just like I said, a companion. She'd go to the bank and go to the store and go to work in the hospital with me. And it was nice because people liked her, and she actually became part of the therapy at times for kids. And anyway, Susie and I, on that day, I decided to take the afternoon off and take my dog and drive 55 minutes away from where we lived and where I worked into the mountains. And this is the Cascade Mountains in Seattle, Washington, 60 miles away from Seattle. We'd done this many times. There wasn't anything unusual about it. Nice day, a little overcast, getting cooler because of being October, but still a wonderful afternoon. And so we drove up, parked my Jeep, and started walking down this old logging road, which was closed to car traffic. Just a dirt-laned road, and we just walked and walked and walked, and about an hour into this, Susie took off barking and, you know, chasing squirrels or raccoons, whatever, you know, dogs do, nothing unusual, but she was out of sight, and then she'd run back to where I was and, you know, happy dog stuff, and we just kept walking, and again, she ran off. And this time, her barking became somewhat different. The tone of her voice sounded like she was more aggressive or against something that might have been aggressive. This area has wildcats and bear and deer and all kinds of wildlife, so I wasn't sure what she might be getting herself into. But I listened and tried to focus in on where she was, because like I said, the underbrush was so dense, I couldn't see her, but I could hear her. So I kind of ran forward down the path further to where maybe I could find her. And I still couldn't see her, but I knew I was close. So thinking that maybe I had to detangle her from an aggressive action from another animal, I picked up a fallen tree branch the size of a large baseball bat in case I had to put it in between her and a cat or a bear or whatever. I had no idea, but I could hear that she was very close, like within 25 feet of where I was. So I took off my day pack, I ran forward and jumped into the bushes through this thicket. And when I again found my footing, I could see her outline, but it was so dark because the tree canopy is very dark in this area that all I could make out was her body was attached to something that looked, and you have to understand, it was not clear, but it looked childlike in size. It was approximately 4.5 feet tall. It was very dark, but it had two arms and two legs and a head, but it was black. It was dark. I could not make it out. And all I could see was my dog being thrown back and forth over the head of this little creature, which made no sense. All this happening within seconds, then I witnessed this creature pulling the jaw apart, the head right off of my dog, and blood and sinew and her flesh just tearing apart, and her terrible sound of screaming while this was happening was just terrible, just terrible. And people say now, even this 25 years later, they say, well, haven't you, you know, gotten over this? I say, no, I haven't gotten over it. It's like seeing your child being killed in front of your eyes, because that's what happened. She died. Her body basically started to fold in on herself as if a hole opened up in her chest, and her body started folding in and literally disintegrating. And I couldn't believe it. I could not believe what I was seeing. And I was screaming for my dog to let go of this creature, but she couldn't. Her life was over. And all I could think of is, I don't believe what I'm seeing, but I'm seeing it. It's witness. I'm still seeing this. And this thing, this creature stopped and stared up at me and let out this terrible sound. And all I could think of was, it's going to kill me. It's going to kill me next. So I lunged forward. I took one step forward and I hit it as hard as I could with this makeshift bat, this branch that I had picked up, and I hit it in the head. I almost missed. And it fell back. Its skull was breached. There was blood coming out of it. It fell down to the ground and stopped moving. And at the same exact moment, I fell to the ground too. And sick, crippling sickness overcame me. I had no idea what it was, but it was, I lost all control of my bowels and my bladder. I barely could breathe. And I lay on the ground within 2 feet of this creature, thinking, what's happening? Am I going to die in this moment? Because I had no idea what my body was going through, nor why. Why was it happening? And it was more than just shock, more than just stress, because my body was not functioning as it normally should. Like I said, I lost all control, and I barely could breathe. I couldn't stand up. I tried to get up on my knees, and I'd fall back down. And this lasted a long time. I mean, I felt like it was minute to minute whether I was going to be able to stay conscious, because I was worried about going into shock and passing out because the way my breathing was. First, it would be hyper extended. Then it would be very, very shallow where I could barely breathe. So this is what happened initially. I lay on the ground for what seemed like an hour without being able to stand up. I would try to stand up and I would fall back down. I didn't want to be next to this creature, but it was not moving. It was not breathing as far as I could see. So I would crawl away. I tried to crawl far away, like within 10 or 12 feet away, just so I didn't have to be close to it. It had a terrible odor. It smelled like rotting meat or fruit, just something decaying. And the whole area, when this happened, once I hit it and it fell down, the whole area changed. The ground felt spongy. The air felt thick and almost wet. And it wasn't at all that way prior to this. There was no sound of birds or the wind in the trees that just moments before I could hear. It was like something had put a container over this whole area where the sound and air and atmosphere just changed completely. I felt labored even trying to crawl forward. And I didn't know what was going on. I had no idea what was happening. I could not even believe what I was witnessing and experiencing, but nevertheless, I couldn't move. And I knew my body was going into shock. And if I didn't try to calm down, and if I didn't try to stop breathing so hard, that it would be worse. So I had a day pack with me earlier, which had my cameras and some day rations and a thermal blanket and some water that I always took with me wherever we would go. So I knew that if I could get to the water, and it was just like 10 feet away, that I could maybe calm down, drink some water, and start to relax and start to calm my body down. So that's what I did. I crawled back to where my pack was, and I said it was only 10 feet from where I was. And I took out, opened the pack, took out my cameras, and took out what was in there, so, and got the water bottle out and drank some of the water, and just sat there, just trying to say to myself, it's okay, you're going to be okay, you're going to get through this. And I kept doing that almost like a mantra, just to believe that I was going to be okay. And I realized my camera was right in front of me. And I thought, oh my God, my camera, that's right. I have it. And I believe that at the time, I did not want to believe that any of this was really happening. I wanted to think that it was an illusion in my head, that maybe I had had some kind of a stroke, and that none of this was real. So I thought to myself, well, you know, I found some comfort in thinking, if I take a picture of the body, then it won't be there. It just won't exist, because it's obviously an illusion in my mind. Maybe something else happened to Susie. Maybe an animal killed her, and I just couldn't comprehend that and didn't want to digest those thoughts. So I thought, okay, I'm going to take a picture of it, and then I'll feel good because it won't be there. So I grabbed the camera, 35 millimeter film, non-digital camera. People have to remember, this was back in the day before digital, before cell phones had cameras on them. And I crawled back down to where the body was, and I took my camera and I started taking pictures of the body. And while I was doing that, I heard this sound, this other sound. It was kind of a low ebbing harmonic tone that drifted through the trees, through the area. And I thought, oh, it's another hiker. Maybe they have a boombox or a radio, and it's that sound I'm hearing. So I kind of stood up against a tree, and I couldn't see anybody in the path at all. And I was irritated and angry that all this was going on. And I thought, well, it's got to be coming from somewhere. So I kind of I pushed myself up to crawl down across the path so I could get a better sight of whether somebody was actually coming up the path or down the path. And I still couldn't see anybody, but I could hear this tone, it was almost like it was resonating so deep, this harmonic sound, that I could feel it in my chest, like it was pulsating. And I couldn't see anything, so I went down further the path. And as I got further, I could see this thing through the trees, this black shape that didn't make any sense, because this is the middle of the national forest, a long ways from civilization. And I kept going, and I'd fall down, and I'd get up, and I would go forward to where I wanted to be able to see this thing. And it was this big black, almost like a Marquis diamond shape. And later I compared photographs and thinking how tall I am and what my height is to estimate that it was approximately 12 feet long, 3.5 feet wide, and 2.5 feet high. And I ended up calling it the obelisk because it just reminded me of the top of the Washington Monument. But it had six sides, six definite sides. But the interesting thing most is it was off the ground about 3 feet. It was actually hovering off the ground, and it wasn't moving. I actually went up against it and pushed it and touched it. And I burned the inside of my hand like touching dry ice because it was freezing cold. but it couldn't move. It wouldn't move. It was like it was anchored to the air, which, again, didn't make any sense to me. What was this? It felt like stone or marble, shiny. It had a depth to its surface, but nevertheless, it was black. It was jet black, and it was just anchored to the air. And the tone was coming from this thing, because as I touched it, the tone changed. It became more pleasant, not so harsh, not so physically, internally piercing my body. For a second, for a split second, when I touched it, I felt like I had fallen into a black room, a black hole. And then a half a second later, I was back outside on the ground, standing and laying, kneeling next to this thing, not believing it. I could not believe what I was seeing. It made no sense. None of this made any sense to me. I had no idea what it could be, what it was, but I felt there was some intelligence with it. It wasn't just a piece of stone. There was something else that it was doing, that it was sensing. Maybe it was sensing me. I don't know, but I do know when I touched it, the tone changed. So I backed up and I took pictures of it. And we can see some of those pictures. This happened in Washington State, approximately 55 minutes away from the Seattle area. We had been to this same area many times before without any situation like this happening. So again, I was totally, totally in shock and out of my element and didn't know what to do because my health was so bad and it was an hour walk to where I had parked my Jeep. I was concerned whether I was even going to be able to make 100 feet versus, an hour walk. But I knew that I had needed to try because this event happened at approximately 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And when you're in the forest, it gets dark fast because of the tree canopy. So I started to think about, well, I'm going to have to leave. I'm going to have to try to get out of here. And I kept thinking, my dog can't be dead. She can't be dead. She must have run off. And I'm just, this is an illusion in my mind. But nevertheless, she wasn't around. There was nowhere. She was nowhere to be found. But I didn't want to believe what I'd seen. I didn't want to think about it. My mind wouldn't let me go there because of going into shock. So I tried to calm down. I tried to say, I have to get out of here. So when I went back to where my pack was, where I'd taken the water out, there was a thermal blanket, which is an emergency blanket that you use. It's a Mylar blanket. It's all folded up in a small little pack in case you need to put it over you, in case you're sick or you're hurt, you're injured. You can wrap up with it and it'll keep your body heat in and around you to keep you from getting hypothermia. And as I looked at this package, I thought, well, maybe I can take that and cover this body up. And my first thought was, I want to cover it up because I don't want to look at it and I don't want anybody else to look at it. That's what was going through my head. But it was also thinking, I don't want anybody else to have the same trauma that I am experiencing with it. So I thought about covering it up and just putting a branch on it or maybe rocks around the edges. Maybe keeping animals away from it. I don't know what all went through my head. It wasn't logical. It wasn't, there was no forethought. It was just minute by minute trying to survive, trying to calm down and breathe, which was really difficult. I'd never been in a situation like this. I had no idea what to do or what was going on. I didn't have a cell phone with me at the time. I had nobody to call, so I was totally on my own. I slid the blanket, the thermal blanket, underneath this creature. I didn't want to touch it with my hands. I slid it under, and I thought, well, maybe I could just kind of fold the blanket over it and roll it up like a sleeping bag and cover it up. So I started to do that. And as I'm doing it, I realized the weight of this, of the body, was so light, I could barely comprehend it. I mean, it was extremely light compared to something that's 4.5 to 5 feet tall, a child. This was a quarter of the weight. So as I rolled it up, I kind of lifted one end of it, and I thought, it's so light, maybe I can carry it off the path over to the side of the path and the hill and cover it there so nothing would get it or nobody would trip over it. So I lifted it up, and I thought, this is incredibly light. So I stood back where my pack was. I took the straps off my pack, and I actually put the straps around the thermal blanket on each end and put it together in the middle so that I could use it like one hand for carrying this body, the other hand for carrying my pack, which kind of equaled the weight somewhat. And I started to walk to look for a place where to put it, where to hide it. All kinds of things were going through my head like that, while always thinking, I can take another 5 steps and rest. I can take another 10 steps and rest, because I didn't want to hyperventilate. I didn't want to go into complete shock. And I was concerned. I was out of my element. Nothing made logical sense. But nevertheless, it was happening all around me. And I thought, it's going to be a long time for me to get back to my car. And then all at once, I saw my Jeep. I saw where I had parked my Jeep. It was like no time had passed. It was like it was a matter of 5 minutes to get back to my Jeep, where it was an hour coming down, walking. And it made no sense. It made absolutely no sense. Nevertheless, I thought, okay, I'm at my Jeep. I've got it. I have to leave. I have to get out of here. And I would stop. I would throw up. I would try to calm down, try to calm my breathing down. And I opened the back of my Jeep, and I lifted this body up, and I put it in the back of my Jeep. Inside, it was inside this thermal blanket, covered up. And I closed the back door, and I walked to the driver's door, and I got in. And I sat there for a long time without doing anything, not knowing what to do, not even wanting to think about what had happened. And I looked over where Susie always sat in the passenger seat, and she wasn't there. And at that moment, I knew something had actually happened. She was gone, because she was always there. And I looked in the mirror, and I could see the top of the thermal blanket in the back of the Jeep. And I my mind just didn't want to even go there. I just didn't want to even think about it. So I started the Jeep, and I started to drive down the road back to the highway. And I remembered there's a ranger station not far from where I was, about 5 miles. So I drove there, and I thought, well, maybe I can get help. Maybe somebody will help me there. And I needed help. And every 5 minutes, I had to stop and actually throw up and try to regain some composure and try to control my breathing. And I get back in, and I drive more, and I got to the ranger station, got out, I knocked on the door, I banged on their windows, but there was nobody there. I don't know where they were. I don't know if they were out to dinner, but it was now like 5:30, 6 o'clock, and it was starting to get dark. And I thought, I've got to get out of here. So I got back in the Jeep. I drove back to the highway, and I drove home, stopping every 10 or 15 miles to just regain some composure. At one time, I thought about trying to get a car to stop to help me, but there was hardly any traffic at this point, and I just wanted to be home. I just wanted to be out of the area and not even really think about what was going on. So I drove to my house. And as I drove in my carport, which was a covered carport right next to an outbuilding, which was a two-car garage, I drove in and just sat there for a long time, just sat there thinking, none of this could be happening. This just doesn't make any sense. And at one point, after sitting in the carport for a long time, I again looked in the rearview mirror and I could see the top of this thermal blanket. And at that moment, I just wanted all of it to change. Susie wasn't there. I felt terrible. I was still sick and I didn't know what to do. And I thought, well, maybe I've committed a crime. Maybe I've killed something that, you know, I know it wasn't a child because I looked and its face was not a mask. It was terrible to deal with. And so I got out of my Jeep and started to walk into the yard. And I thought, I can't leave this in the car. If somebody opens my Jeep, if somebody stole my Jeep, this would be terrible. And I thought, well, maybe I have to take this somewhere. I have to take the body somewhere. And all I know is that what went through my mind is I didn't want to look at it. I didn't want to see it. So I thought, okay, I have a freezer in my garage. I have a small, older freezer, like a what people call a coffin freezer that somebody had given to me. And it ended up being a perfect place to put it because there was hardly anything in my freezer. So I just took the basket that had some small things of frozen food out of it, and I put the body with the thermal blanket completely in the freezer and closed the lid and stumbled into my house. And as I went into the house, I lived alone. There was no one there. I just walked right directly into the shower with all my clothes on and stood in the shower for I don't know how long, just trying to clean up because I was a mess. I was just an absolute mess. My mind was just racing in and out of trying to understand what had happened, trying to even comprehend this. And I finally got out of the shower, put on some other clothes, went into my kitchen, picked up the phone. I tried to call my girlfriend at the time. She wasn't home. I left her a message. I tried to call a guy that was my best friend, Gary, at the time, who lived just a few miles away, somebody who I'd grown up with. And he wasn't home, so I left a message and I said, Gary, call me. You know, something's happened. Something terrible has happened. Please call me. And I went and sat down. I sat down in the living room and just stared into space, just laid on the couch in a fetal position, not knowing what to do. There was no reality. There was no logic to what had gone on. And my mind was having a great deal of difficulty dealing with it. But nevertheless, it happened. And I took the pictures with my cameras. I decided that that would be the best bet for me because chances are nothing would show up. And then I could say it was all an illusion. It was a delusion that I was having. And my friend came over. He talked to me. He didn't believe me, of course. I told him Susie was dead. He knew Susie. He knew everybody knew my dog, Susie. And I said, it's out in the garage. It's out in the freezer. And he said, Susie's in the freezer? I said, no, I don't know. I don't know what's in the freezer. And so we both went out and I opened the freezer. I took the thermal blanket out, laid it on the floor and opened it and showed him. And it wasn't Susie. It was this small gray creature that had a hole in its head. It had breached the skull when I hit it. It was obviously dead. There had been blood everywhere. It was a 2-inch hole, at least. There was skin and bone and blood hanging from the wound. It was old looking. The skin was old, like a pig skin, really thick and dense and coarse. It was grayish brown. And once it was in the freezer, it was even more gray. And it had a tendency, I believe, to change color because of the cold. And that happens to a lot of things in cold. Flesh, the density of flesh and tissue changes in color. You can actually see in some of the side pictures the temporal tympanic ear, which is a small circle in the center. You can see some of the veins and the arteries running up to the neck, small mouth, very large eyes. Each eye was 2.5 inches in width, dense eyelids, very thick, dense eyelids. But I took it home. I opened its eyes. I opened its mouth. I did a topical examination of this thing and videotaped it and photographed it. And some of these photographs Jerry's now showing you. In the days that followed this, a lot happened in the first 9 days that was difficult to comprehend. Gary, my friend, said, well, I know what this is. And I said, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. He says, well, it's an alien. And I said, I don't want to hear it. I don't believe in that. And he said, Jonathan, it's in front of you. This is an important thing. And I just did not want to go there. And he says, well, we need to call people. We need to have people come and look at this. And that was the last thing I wanted to do was call. And I told him, well, you call people and I'll give it to you. I don't want to even deal with this. So he started to call people. He called the Air Force, the news, the local authorities. And of course, nobody wanted to deal with it. Nobody took us seriously. And he ended up calling one group that he said was specialized in this type of thing, some group called MUFON, which I'd never heard of. And Mutual UFO Network is what it stands for. But at the time, I didn't know any of this stuff, none of it. It made no sense to me. But these people at the end of this telephone conversation, Gary said, they want to meet you. They want to come over and meet you in some public place. And maybe you can come and, talk to them about it. Maybe they'll help. And I thought, okay, all right, need help. That's a good idea. So during that next few days, that's what we did. I had the film process. I made multiple copies of everything. I had taken multiple rolls of film, equivalent of about 90 photographs. I had had a video camera with me in the woods, so I videotaped the entire event, including the body, including the black obelisk that was hovering, floating, anchored to the air. You can see all of it. It's three-dimensional. It's not digital. It was done prior to people having any kind of editing or digital material. At least I didn't. It's all negative film. I mean, it's the real negatives. We've had the negatives have been analyzed by both Kodak and other professionals. They are exactly what they say they are. They were made contemporaneously with the event. The film is dated properly. It's just both print and slide film, nothing special. They're all single exposures. And we have the documentation that states all of that. One thing I want to say, Jerry, is people say, well, how haven't we heard any of this? How come we haven't heard about this? Well, in 1996, when all this happened, within 10 days of it happening, because people were tearing my house apart, looking for either evidence or the body, they were tearing my parents' house apart, my girlfriend, my friends. People were searching for this. How they found out about it, all we can assume is that one of the phone calls was monitored. We knew we'd been followed during that first week by different vans and different cars, almost run off the road twice. So I knew this was a problem. I had elderly parents, and at that time, they had broken into their house too, and it was a terrible situation. So I decided I'm going to leave. I'm going to leave the state. So I borrowed a car. I got in a car and I drove 2 hours to the Canadian border. And I lived in Vancouver. I didn't want to bring this down on my friends and my family, because during that first few days, I had made a call to my work, a place that I'd worked for years and years, the University of Washington Medical Center, where I was a department supervisor. I got my partner on the phone, guy that I worked with every day, and he said, Jonathan, are you moving your office? And I said, no. And I told him that I was sick, that I wasn't coming in because I felt terrible. And at that point, he said, well, there's men here moving everything out of your office. They're taking it all out on pallets and you know, taking it out. They're clearing out your office. And I said, there's no way anybody's supposed to be doing that. I shared this office with the guy that I was talking to. And he said, well, you got to call administration and find out what's going on. So I called, and instead of just asking the question as myself, I called and asked if I could speak to Dr. Jonathan Reed. And they said, one moment. They put me on hold. They came back and they said, we're sorry, we don't have a Dr. Jonathan Reed working in this facility. You must be mistaken. And from that point on, my life was torn apart by what I call the men in black, or the dark side. They followed me. They hassled my friends and my family. So that's the reason I left. I left my home. I left my country. There's people that have been killed, that are dead, that shouldn't be, that I know was a direct result of what happened with me and these kind of people. This has been going on for 25 years. You know, I've been on the street or living as a hunted person for most of 20 years. This is not a joke. This is not some fantasy that it's written on the internet. There are people that have cast and spread the rumors that this is a hoax, that this is all some fantasy, that I'm not a doctor, that I never went to med school. Well, I've proven that I went to med school. I've had a council of 7 of my peers review me for 4 hours who knew me, but yet people who wouldn't come forward because they were in fear of their career too. And I don't blame them. I've had nurses that worked in my department give statements. People from my bank, my bankers, who knew me, who took in my money, who made deposits and withdrawals for me, who I had a loan with. Well, guess what? That bank had no paperwork saying that I was ever a person of their customer. I was never part of their bank. So I had to sue the bank to get my money back because I had a lot of money in the bank, which they refused to give me for over 2 years. And I ended up getting about half of it back, but half was better than nothing. I had to sue the United States government to get my passport information back because they said it didn't exist. Nevertheless, I had it. They had gone into my house and stolen things that were so unbelievable. Why would they take a cord of wood that was piled in my garage? They did take the freezer, the entire freezer, out of my garage. They took all the things in my house, piled them up in the center of the room because they had obviously gone through them, and put holes in the walls and holes in the ceiling and in the floor like they were looking for something all over the house. Even outside in the garden and in the lawn, there were holes like they were probing with something. People saw them doing this. Neighbors saw them doing this and had no idea what was going on. And after I had come back, I saw this. I saw what they had done. And that's why I left, because there was nothing left. They had taken great deals of my evidence, of my photographic evidence, but I still have some. And the reason I have some is Gary was smart enough to realize when they were going through people's houses and chasing us in cars, he said, let's mail some of this away. Let's take it out of our hands and put it somewhere else where nobody will see it. And if it hadn't been for that, you wouldn't be seeing these pictures now. And it was an unbelievable circumstance. And like I said, the last 25 years have been very difficult. Now, I do want to say, people say, well, why wasn't this investigated? Well, it was. In 2002, Wendell Stevens, Robert Dean, Bob Dean, Dan McAvoy, Donald Ware, all put their resources together and said, and even John Mack, Dr. John Mack, got involved, interviewed me, and they, over 2 years, walked in my shoes, went to my universities, went and interviewed my relatives and people I worked with, and proved that I am who I say I am. Now, did I change some things in the initial story? Yes, I did, because I was trying to protect my family and friends. I changed my name early on because I didn't want them to go after my family members, but eventually they did anyway. So I ended up saying my rightful name. So all I can say, Jerry, is this was a situation that I didn't want to happen. I never wanted to do this. I was happy with my life. You know, I had sports cars. I had all the money that I ever could have imagined that I would be able to earn. I had status within my medical community. I liked my job. I liked the people I worked with. I was happy. And they took it all away within 9 days. They took it all away. They stopped at my house during those 9 days. Some people came to my door and said, we need to talk to you about what happened in the forest. And I said, nothing happened. And they said, oh, yes, we know your dog is dead. We know something happened. These people came in my house, in my living room, and told me that if I didn't give them everything and stop talking about this, that they would destroy my life as I knew it. I didn't believe them. You know, I told them to get the fuck out of my house and I was going to call the police. And as they were leaving my house, they said, the police are with us. And there was a police car parked right behind their car. So this is what has happened. These kind of things have happened. And the slander that's on the internet is absolutely not true. Nobody investigated my case in regard to what is said on the internet. You know, Wendell Stevens, Bob Dean, Dan McAvoy, John Mack, those are the guys who really spent the time invested in looking at what I was and what had happened. On the ninth day, when they had torn my house apart, I thought they had gotten the body. I thought they had taken this creature because the freezer was gone and they had pried the inside door completely out of the door frame and able to get the freezer out because they didn't take it out the big door because the big door was locked, permanently closed. Something I need to mention is on the third day, I had been taking the body out of the freezer and showing it to people I worked with, to people I trusted, to friends, to my mom and dad. I mean, a lot of people, you know, 15 people at least. And on the third day, when I was going to show it to somebody, I had set up a table to set the body on in the garage and a big light over the top of it so that they could see it clearly. And I went out to the garage when I found out they weren't coming. I had gotten a phone call saying, no, I can't come. I'm not going to be able to do this, Jonathan. And it was kind of a rude call from somebody I knew. So I was a little bit peeved. So I went back out to the garage, took the table down, and while I was there, I heard this sound, kind of a scratching or rubbing sound coming from under the freezer. And I thought, oh, it's the compressor. It's going to go out. It's going to quit taking the cold out of the freezer. I'm going to have to move the body, clean out my refrigerator in the house, something. And I thought, well, I gotta check. So inside the freezer door, as you lifted it up, was a thermometer and showing the temperature and showing that it was, you know, should have been like 10 to 20 degrees as it functioned normally. So I just went over, I'd been doing this for days, opened it. And as I opened the lid, this creature sat up and screamed at me. And such a volume, such a violent scream that it felt like somebody was pushing me against my chest, against out away from the freezer. I mean, it was a physical, audible thing. And I was scared to death. It sat up, it screamed, it looked at me, and it was just this long, droning scream. And I fell kind of back against the side of the door by the way out of the garage. I just ran out of the garage and went into the house and just sat there, just numb, not knowing what to do, not knowing if it was going to come in the house. But it was, the freezer was open, the door to the garage was open and unlocked. It could leave. I said, good, it'll leave. I hope it runs away. Because I figured it's going to kill me. Next, it's going to attack me. I mean, to me, it was a wild animal. I'd seen it kill my dog, you know, within 6 feet of it happening. So I knew it was capable of doing that. And at that point, I called my friend Gary, who he obviously knew what was going on. And he said, what's going on? And I said, it's alive. He said, Jonathan, you're sick. You're going into sickness. It's not alive. I've seen it. It's deaf. It's got a hole in its head. And I said, it's alive. And I hung up on him. And he came over. And again, he said, Jonathan, you know, you got to calm down. You have to realize that this can't be happening. You know that the function of this being, that it hadn't moved. Once you hit it, once its skull was breached and cracked open, you've seen its brain. You can see that there was blood everywhere. It cannot be alive. I said, okay, fine. Come with me. You come to the garage with me, and I'll tell you whether it's alive or dead. And all I can say is we went to the garage. I said, open the freezer, because the freezer lid had closed. And he opened it, and it sat up and screamed, and he practically crawled up the wall. He was as white as my coat. And we both ran into the house and just sat there without saying anything to each other. And he just said, he says, "I can't believe it. I can't believe it." And I said, "I told you." So it's alive. The men in black didn't get it. I later found that out. He's fine. He's on his own. He went back to his own people as such. But in those first 9 days, it was chaos. It was chaos and bedlam. The people that we called that said were MUFON that I went and met at a local diner were extremely excited, were extremely professional. They said, "Can we have these pictures?" I said, "Yes, I've made copies." They took them. I called their number 2 days later. That number didn't exist. MUFON said they'd never heard from us, ever. So this is
That's just, you know, it sounds to me very much, excuse me, I'm absolutely blown away by this, and I've heard this before, but I'm revisiting it with you now, and, you know, it reminds me a lot of,
sorry.
That's okay. Happens to me too.
It's a difficult thing to relive because it changed my life. I mean, totally, absolutely. Like I said, I've had people help me over these years. I created what we call the team of a bunch of expatriates that are more than willing to help me. That sometimes it's four people, sometimes it's 15 or 20 who have gone with me to conferences and other things across the world that live with us, that literally are my 24-hour partners. And Holly's here.
Hello.
You know, she can, why don't you sit over here?
Jonathan, this sounds so much like what happened to Bob Lazar. They are basically erased him.
Oh yeah, all my credentials at all of my colleges, my banks, everywhere was erased 100%. There was no database that had my name on it. My employment, which I said was a matter of, you know, going into 15 years. Plus, I had done an internship there for another 4.5 years. Mm-hmm. None of the facilities had any record of me ever. My college and my employment.
So,
what about yearbooks? I mean, sure, the yearbooks, you know, there's some records of some sort.
There's some records of me when I was really, really young. I mean, back in the day, there's a high school yearbook. But most of the college things that participated with photographs, I didn't have done. I just didn't do that.
I see.
Okay. Another thing, Jerry, something interesting. People say, well, you know, there's got to be records. Well, when I turned 65, somebody sent from the government, from Social Security, they send you a list of all your earnings in your life. And the dates of how much you earn per year.
Right.
Well, it's interesting that approximately when I was 20 years old, the income stopped completely, 100%. There is no list on the Social Security showing that I paid thousands of dollars a year. I mean, I was making in excess in 1996, I was making approximately $200,000 a year income. Okay, there's no list of that at all. Nothing is listed, so therefore I have no Social Security.
Well, you know what? We've been on here for hour and a half. I think it's time for us to take a break.
Again, I just want to say, and it's important, if I hadn't have experienced this myself, if I hadn't have seen the evidence and participated in it all, hey, I probably wouldn't believe it either. But nevertheless, it happened. And I've got the proof. I've got some of the most incredible, clear photographs ever taken and videotape of an alien creature. We also, I had some facility to use at the place I worked where I knew some people, and I actually took blood and tissue samples into the lab, and they did a DNA chromosome test on the tissue and the blood from this.
Okay, when we now when we get back from break, let's talk about that, Jonathan. Because okay. I know folks are definitely going to be interested to hear more about this.
Okay, and again, thank you, everybody, for listening. I know it's a long story, but it's complex, and the complexities are important. So thank you. Thank you,
absolutely.
Jerry.
Absolutely. Okay. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. I just don't know what to say about that. All right.
Tonight's show is sponsored by Kathy. Hey, that's me. This is Goofy.
No, it's great. You are the sponsor tonight.
She makes the coffee that keeps us going.
And the coffee just keeps on going, doesn't it? Yeah, sorry about that. Anyway, we're going to take a break. And when we get back, we're going to hear about the blood and tissue samples that that Jonathan's talking about. And we'll also open up the phone lines. Take your calls. Hopefully that system will be working better than it did last night. And if not, we'll be watching for comments. That'll be Kathy's department. We'll see how it goes, though. I have a feeling we're just getting started with a lot of the amazing story here. So, with that said, I want to tell everyone who is listening on our radio server that this concludes the free portion of our show. There's a lot more to come. If you're only listening on the radio, you've been missing the photos, of course. There's quite a few of those. We'll have those showing up here shortly. Consider becoming a member. Because if you're a member, you're seeing it all, you're hearing it all. And, of course, that's exactly what you want at a time like this, especially with a story of this nature. So, with that, I guess I'll go to break. See you later. Hello, Holly. Hello there, Jonathan. And hello to all of you folks, wherever you are in this great big world. Thanks for tuning in tonight, and thanks for sticking with us past the break. If you missed the first part of this, which is about an hour and a half long, really, I feel so bad for you. I hope you don't miss the second part. For you who are listening on the radio, like I told you at the end of the commercial, this part of it's over. If you want to catch the rest of the show, you need to become a member. The way that you do that, there's a couple of ways. Probably the easiest way, go to jerrywellshow.com, which is where you're at right now listening to this, probably. Go to members area, find this show. This is the interview with Dr. Jonathan Reed. Click on it. It'll take you to Patreon, and you can become a member there. We have all kinds of goodies in there for you. At the very least, this program should be worth at least $2, because that's the entry level for just watching all of these shows, and that's all you have to ever pay is $2 a month. You get to watch all the shows. However, you might want to go up a little higher. At $15, you're going to get everything. Now, there are $25 and $100 levels, and I don't know why, but some people choose those. However, for everything, you know, just go to the $15 level. You're going to get access to the GPS tracking software that allows you to track us every 10 minutes. A pin's dropped on the map, no matter where we're traveling, when we're traveling. We also have the Expeditions TV mobile camera attached to the Phaeton. We fire that up when we're going down the road so that you can watch and see exactly what we're seeing as we travel. Then, of course, there's all these other goodies that I'm not going to go into right now, but there's a lot of it. Choose which level you want to be at, whatever you can afford, and watch the rest of this show. Alrighty, that's all the promotion. The radio server is now being switched off. Good night to you who are listening on the radio server. There it's off.